position ranking series is back. We're starting with linebackers. Run and chase versus Patriot style versatility, the value of the coach on the field types, and of course our ranking of the top 10 linebackers in the NFL for 2019. It's all on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. It's Memorial Day, or it just was Memorial Day, depending on when you're listening to this. So I hope you enjoyed the unofficial start of summer. And if it's summer, it means, Andy, it's our annual position rankings series starting now.
Yeah, and here's a good example of why we're doing this. I'm just pulling up three stories at the top of a feed for NFL news. The first one says, Joe Hayden thinks Steelers can use doubts to their advantage. The next breaking news story is Leonard Fournette. We're not focused on the past. And then the last one is Randall Cobb apparently is now carrying a chip on his shoulder. And I've never heard of any guy in the NFL having a chip on their shoulder. So I'm going to be sure to read the Cobb story in full. But once we get through all that, if there's time, I would like to talk real football.
We will not be discussing any of those stories. I'm sorry, Andy. I know those are all big headlines right there. But we're doing, if you've missed these shows in the past, or I don't know, maybe you just listened to them but forgot what they were about, we will unveil our position rankings for every position. We have 10 shows in the series. But really, the best part of the show is the first part. We're going to talk about some trends with each position. We are starting with linebackers today.
We're ranking the linebackers is what you mean. We're going to talk linebacker trends and then rank them, right?
And then we rank the linebackers in the rankings part. So
I think the rankings are the best part of the show. Have I been curmudgeonly about that in the past?
No, not curmudgeonly. But the thing we always bristle at is people get so worked up about the rankings. And again, a lot of these are the guy who's, you know, this guy's 6 and this guy's 10 and they should be reversed. And, well, there's not that much separation. We at this position, at the linebacker position, we happen to have a unanimous number 1 and a unanimous number 2. But, you know, people just get too worked up about it. And it overshadows the rest of our genius.
Okay, that's fair. I think we have smarter listeners than, like, I think our, maybe we have to edit this out. I think our listeners are smarter than our readers at MNQB.
I think that's fair to say.
Okay, so I don't think we'll catch as much. If we printed this, I think we'd hear from every Joe Blow in the home city of the team whose linebacker came in 8th instead of 5th. But I give our listeners a little more credit.
Okay. That's fair enough, and if you listen and read to the MMQB, I don't know, you're somewhere in the middle. You're mediocre. You're not dumb, and you're not smart. But let's get to it. We did shuffle up the order. I think in past years we've led off with the running backs, and we've had a fairly consistent order. This year we're just, you know, we're trying something new, freshen it up, keep everyone on their toes.
But let's get to linebackers. We're doing stack linebackers, none of this Von Miller stuff.
Exactly. And we're not going to do it the way the all-pro voting goes, where, what is it, Andy? Players can basically declare themselves at different positions, and that's why Von Miller is an all-pro wide receiver.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something like that. It's something like that. They need an edge position. Well, they have the edge position on the all-pro, but some guys like Von Miller, and I think Justin Houston was another, they still get, for whatever reason, classified as linebackers.
Okay. Well, we don't do that. These are the off-the-ball, the stack linebackers. I don't think we really had anyone who was kind of a tweener this year. We'll mention some at some positions. Like when we get to defensive line versus edge, I'm sure there will be some. I don't think there was any. Von Miller is not on the show. He'll be on the edge show. But these are the off-the-ball guys. But let's start with some of the topics and trends going around the league at the linebacker position. And I'm just going to say this, Andy. Last year, we had a couple of all-pro caliber rookies, and Darius Leonard was literally all-pro, and Leighton Vander Esch might have been as well had he played more snaps early in the year. But when we got to the Super Bowl last year, arguably the best players on the field that night were Kyle Van Noy and Dante Hightower. Dante Hightower it was spectacular in the last Super Bowl he played in, too, back when they beat Atlanta. So these are guys who are playing sort of more versatile roles. Leonard and Vander Esch, meanwhile, they're relatively simple schemes. That's what you need to hit the ground running as a rookie, and I think you were a big fan of that, the fact that those guys could get on the field and make such a big impact early on thanks to those schemes. But when those two teams were eliminated, the Colts and the Cowboys, those rookies kind of got picked on a little bit.
Well, in the playoffs, I think Leonard, by his standard, which is all-pro standard, was maybe, I'd have to go back and look at my notes from that film, but he looked like a rookie at times, as anyone would. That scheme in Indy did expand as the season went along, so I'll be eager to see what Leonard looks like this year, now that they've had a whole offseason together and under Matt Eberflus, their defensive coordinator there. And I'm going to go see those guys next week, by the way. So that's to be determined. Van Der Esch, I know exactly what you're saying. And in a scheme like Dallas's, and this is going to be true of almost every scheme, so we might as well just get this topic over and done with. If your defensive tackles don't play well, your linebackers are often going to struggle. And that's what happened. You're talking about that Rams playoff game where Gurley had 100-plus and C.J. Anderson had 100-plus. Yeah, that game, Dallas's defensive tackles, for whatever reason, got their asses handed to them like they never have before. And Van Der Esch and Jalen Smith did not play well enough to compensate. But I don't know if Ray Lewis circa 2000 would have played well enough to compensate that night.
So I guess my argument, Andy, would be, I think I like the fact that the Patriots have these veteran linebackers who are doing a number of things. I mean, Kyle Van Noy, they sort of struggled to find a role for him in Detroit, and now in New England, he's thriving doing a number of different things. Basically, I think versatility at the linebacker position, and when we say that, it's not just get an athletic guy who can cover and can run around and make plays against the run, but guys who can serve in a number of different roles. I mean, Hightower sets the edge, he rushes the passer, he plays a traditional linebacker spot. Having those guys just allows your scheme to expand so much more. And I think that is key when you get into January football. And number one, you have so much stuff on tape and there's so much of your opponent on tape. And number two, you just you need to be flexible.
I agree with you. I thought Van Noy was the MVP of the Super Bowl this year. And I bet you a lot of those Rams guys would agree. Stephon Gilmore had a great game that day as well. But Kyle Van Noy is the everything piece in their defense. Now, in Hightower, he does that as well. Van Noy's a touch more athletic than Hightower. Hightower is a touch stronger than Van Noy. But basically, those are their guys. Those guys give the texture and the structure to New England's scheme. It'll be interesting to see what happens with them now that Jamie Collins is back in the mix, because Collins provides the athleticism to play all three downs. But I'm with you. It's very different styles of linebacker. Those two, I think, and are they the only, I guess I'm looking at our rankings now, it looks like they don't quite make our top 10, not to spoil it, but are they the only linebackers in the league who are like, I guess Anthony Barr would be another big thumping linebacker, but the scheme in Minnesota isn't built around Barr being a thumper. He's just a thumper within the context of that scheme.
Yeah, that's, you look at this, it's a lot of,
Running chase guys.
Exactly. I say this not rudely, but sort of simplified schemes that are producing these guys in the top eight or so of our rankings.
That could be fair, I guess. I think the bottom line, the big picture of all this, Gary, is linebackers in today's NFL play in space more than ever before, and they have to be able to run because of that. And it's not just three receiver sets, which they're facing a lot, but that's a big part of it. It's also spread formations. It's misdirection stuff, which the faster you are as a linebacker, the better chance you have of recovering against misdirection. Speed is more important than ever at linebacker, and that's why a lot of these guys, they're getting smaller, but they're getting faster.
Well, let's go to a guy who just became the highest paid linebacker in the NFL, and he probably doesn't quite fit into this mold. I don't want to say CJ Mosley is completely unathletic, but he is not on the same tier as most of the guys we'll talk about in our rankings. But is there something to be said? A guy like him, he came from such a multiple complex defense in Baltimore, sort of having that, for lack of a better phrase, let's call it like a defensive quarterback in there, and just someone who basically just gets everyone lined up properly. Do we overlook that in this day and age?
Yes and no. I would say the yes part. The other day, I genuinely do forget who I was talking to. I was talking to a coach. It wasn't on the record, but we were talking about linebackers and how you teach them and what they did with their scheme. And I said, well, but if you have a smart veteran middle linebacker, theoretically, can you just have one of that and have him tell everyone else where to line up? And he said, yeah, you can. Antonio Pierce was that guy for the Giants for a long time. Mm-hmm. The problem, though, is if you really want everyone playing fast, your guys all have to know what they're doing out there. Yeah. It's one thing to be told where to line up, but then you also have to know what you're doing. And you remember, as a defense, you're playing on the offense's tempo a lot of the time. So a guy like Mosley is very valuable because he's going to help make your scheme multiple, but he's only as valuable as the coaching staff is good ultimately, because everyone's going to have to know what they're doing. And you're right about Mosley. He's a little bit of a different kind of linebacker. He's what the linebackers were 10 or 15 years ago. He's a little stouter. He does not run. I think he runs very well, but he's not fast. He's not a fast guy. He's an efficient player. And those are two, they can look the same, but they're two different things in a lot of scenarios. And there were coverages that Baltimore didn't want to run because Mosley's vertical speed wasn't always what you desire or what you need. But there's a lot of stuff they could do because Mosley's lateral speed was excellent. And I think as important as anything, Gary, at least with Baltimore's scheme, we'll see what Mosley does with the Jets. But as a Raven, his physicality and technique were outstanding, and the Raven coaches raved about Mosley's ability to use his hands.
Yeah, he. I remember that Thursday night game. I think it was actually week two last year in Cincinnati when he went down. And granted, things are a little bit different when you lose someone in the middle of the game as opposed to going into the game. But it took him a little while to recover. They fell behind by quite a bit in that game. I think they were down 28-7 in the second quarter in that game, and that was probably their shakiest defensive performance of the year. But it's interesting. What do you think of it? Just because we will have Mosley in our top 10 ranking, we're not going to have Avery Williamson, his teammate there. What do you think that pairing from a chemistry standpoint in Greg Williams' scheme?
I like it. I think stylistically it works well because Williamson's a little bit of a faster player. I don't recall him having any issues with assignments on a regular basis. So I think he can handle, my guess is he can handle a lot. Tennessee asked him to do a lot of different things. That's just how Tennessee's scheme was under Dick LeBeau when Williamson was there. So I think that's a good pairing. The question when you look at linebackers, Gary, is it's, can one of them cover? Because one of them ultimately has to cover. If you're playing two deep safeties, the cover linebacker takes the tight end. And then more often, if you're playing one deep safety, the coverage linebacker, if we're talking matching up now, he's going to take the running back and the other linebacker is a free defender or blitzer. You need one guy who can cover. The Bengals, for example, haven't had guys who can cover. Vontaze Burfict's their best linebacker, and he's not a cover artist per se. And you see the effect of that defense over the long haul. Williamson to me is the cover guy in that equation, even though Mosley's probably the better zone defender of those two.
Yeah, yeah. Two guys I just want to bring up before we get to the rankings, because they won't be in the rankings because they're not going to play in 2019. One being Reuben Foster in Washington, tore the ACL. We'll see what kind of other damage might have happened in that non-contact injury, and he certainly has a cloudy future at this point. And Telvin Smith, who walked away and seems to have really surprised the Jaguars by walking away, and it apparently will not be playing in 2019. But just take both those guys, Andy. Do you think either would have made your top 10? And basically, how difficult are those guys to replace in their respective defenses?
Well, let's do Telvin Smith real quick. And there's something going on with him that we don't know about, and I guess you just wish the best for him and leave it at that. Football-wise, he was not as good last year. Neither was Miles Jack. Nobody on Jacksonville was as good last year. But football-wise, he's a very fast player, and you can't replace that. And I'm looking at the rest of their linebacking unit. I don't know much. Do you know anything about their third-round rookie Quincy Williams, Gary?
He was the
he's the Murray State guy. He's the one everybody.
He was the shock of the draft. He's Quinnen's brother. He was an absolute shock.
That's right.
To be perfectly honest, I watched zero tape on him. I did not know he would be drafted.
You know, I had another GM tell me that he was like that he was that high on their board as well. That they would have wanted him in the third round. And
interesting.
So I don't know how well. I'm just wondering if he can run as well, because Jake Ryan's or other backup, Najee Good as well. Neither of those guys are great runners. Maybe Leon Jacobs, or seventh round pick last year. They've got a hole in their defense. There's no way they were expecting Telvin Smith to walk away or take a sabbatical, because they really don't have this. You would need another fast linebacker to replace him, and there's no proven fast linebacker on that roster behind him. Miles Jack, of course, is still mm-hmm. outstanding, but he's already one of your starters.
Yeah, I mean, they were they might have long-term plans for Quincy Williams, but I do not think they thought they were going to have to find a replacement for Telvin Smith this season. So we'll see. Quincy Williams is actually still listed as a safety on NFL.com's draft board. So
okay, well, that tells you he can run then.
Presumably.
If he's a safety, he'd be a fast linebacker. And last year, they played their safety, Ronnie Harrison, mm-hmm. at linebacker a lot of the time, if I recall. So he was their third linebacker at times, which just tells you that reiterates the point. That's a speed system. That's a run and chase system. And in that Seahawks, well, maybe, you know what, we'll get into it. Remind me when we do some of these other guys on that Seahawks style scheme, because they'll be an easier example. Mm-hmm. But there's a real specific reason why you need speed at that position in certain schemes.
And Reuben Foster, still not get to see him in Washington, 2020 at the earliest, and we'll see. Like I said, we'll see what kind of damage happened to the knee and whether he is going to be back at 100% next year.
Here's two things that are true about Reuben Foster right now. If we're looking at the big long-term picture, well, let's do three things. The first is he's extremely talented, which is why he got drafted where he did, and he would have gone higher if not for the second thing, which he's had the obvious off-field issues. And then the third thing, which probably from a football standpoint in the minds of the people who will decide one day whether to pay Reuben Foster, this trumps those first two, is he's been injury prone, and he missed a lot of time. And I don't know if it's injury. It's not like he's tearing soft muscles, I guess, soft mm-hmm. tissue or anything like that. But he missed a lot of time as a rookie with injury, and now he's going to miss, what, his third season here, his second season? That's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what kind of future he has. Like I said, he just hasn't been on the field much. And on top of that, there could be some major damage there. And he was a rare athlete and a guy who, I remember when he's coming out of Alabama, Nick Saban said he was more of a visual learner than a chalk talk kind of guy. He didn't do well on the whiteboard when he interviewed with teams. And Saban sort of said, don't worry about that. And he sort of saw when he was on the field why Saban wasn't worried about that. But this is going to be a tough year for him coming up.
Well, and they need him in Washington. The reason he's there is because the other Foster, Mason Foster, does not run well enough to play in nickel anymore. And offenses knew that. And down the stretch last year, everybody's game plan centered around attacking Washington's linebackers with high-low routes and coverage, just dinking and dunking on those guys, making them move. And they weren't good enough to move. I see that the Redskins signed John Bostic to kind of fill the Foster spot. Bostic was available because Pittsburgh didn't want him back because he didn't move well enough to play nickel either. So I don't know who's going to defend the pass in Washington. Josh Harvey Clemens is their most athletic. And I guess Sean Dion Hamilton, a lot of three name guys here, that they're better athletes, but they're low drafted guys. They're not every down players either. So it's a lot of mixing and matching on the horizon for Washington's linebackers.
It is. All right, Andy. You know, before we get to the rankings here, I just want to give a couple of quick programming notes. As we said, we will be unveiling this year's, and we're going to call it supersized ranking of the NFL's top 10 players at each position as we go along, because we just voted for more guys this year. I don't know if it'll really affect your life in any way, but we're gonna list more names, I suppose, in the end. But we'll have that every Monday. On Wednesdays, Albert, Jenny, and Connor will continue to do their thing. And of course, Connor, or I will just name him the host of the Bad Football Movie series, because he has been on everyone and basically been hosting it. But that will continue to come out Fridays. I haven't listened to the Replacements one. The last one I heard was the Longest Yard remake. That was Connor. It was Bette Marsden. It was Mark Moravec. Boy, that was a roller coaster. That episode was a roller coaster. They really had some highs and lows there. They were shocked by the death of Chris Rock's character, and it was something to behold. But
that's a spoiler what you just did there. I know that's not the kind of movie that you watch for the plot, but it's still sloppy habit to give spoilers on podcasts.
No, because Peter King stars in that movie. So if you are listening to this show and you haven't seen that movie, I don't know what to say. I mean, you've lived your life the wrong way.
I don't think I've seen the movie.
I don't think I have either. but now I know that Chris Rock died. But anyways,
they usually kill off the stars in the movies either. I remember I saw the movie Deep Blue Something or Deep Blue Sea. It was something, and the something was the sea. And LL Cool J's character miraculously lives, and I later learned that's because he's LL Cool J, and who's going to take him off of a movie script?
Okay. I don't remember that movie at all. I'm not sure that exists.
You probably saw it.
All right. Brandon says...
It was that kind of movie.
Brandon says it exists, so I
Yeah,
will,
I was a kid, and it was rated R. It was the first R movie my dad let me go to, and it was only because the PG-13 we wanted to see had... it was sold out. And so the whole movie, I sat there both rooting for R-rated material and then rooting against it because I knew if there was too much, my dad would storm out of the theater with
me. Pull the plug early.
Two F-bombs overall, though. Not bad for an R movie.
Okay. First R movie I ever saw was definitely Revenge of the Nerds, but the first movie I ever saw in the theater, Andy, when I was 4 years old, I saw Ghostbusters. Do you know how terrifying Ghostbusters is on a big screen for a four-year-old?
I vaguely remember seeing Ghostbusters as well. I was young, but I wouldn't have seen it on a big screen, though, because I wasn't alive when it came out. Yeah. I would argue that's bad parenting, though.
The county should have taken at least me out of the house after that one. But it was me and my two older brothers, and my mom just sent us all to the movies, and it was Ghostbusters.
Okay, so the
and
parents
it was,
weren't, did your mom know that
oh,
you
no,
were
she,
going?
Oh, no, she knew I was going. Yeah.
Okay, bad parenting then.
Yeah.
Bad parenting.
And then I was made fun of for, like, the rest of my life for closing my eyes during the entire movie after the library scene. The library scene is still one of the scariest things you could see in a movie, and I was 4 years old, and I saw it on a giant screen, and I'll never be the same.
It hardened you, Gary.
It did. It did. Brandon's showing me Species was... How old were you when you saw Species? Whoa! In the theater? 5 years old? Brandon saw Species when he was 5 years old in the theater, Andy.
That's horrible.
That's really R. That was, that was, yeah. That's that makes a young boy grow up fast. One of those movies. All right. With that, let's go to the rankings. Now, this is three people voted on this. Andy, myself, Ryan Taylor, our longtime researcher, and now brilliant legal mind, as far as I know.
Not yet. He just started.
He's a really fast learner, so I think he's already a brilliant legal mind. I would go to him for legal advice, I'll tell you that much. But we were the three voters. Andy's vote counts double because he knows twice as much about football as anyone, and I don't know, I don't want to... No, I'll do it this one, and then I'll sort of half-ass it on the rest of the shows. It's AP poll style. We voted top 20 this year, not just top 15. We voted top 20. So if you got a 20th place vote, you get 1 point. 19th place, two points. All the way up to if you got a first place vote, you got 20 points. And like I said, Andy's counts double. We added them up, and we got our ranking. I won't run through. We had 29 guys. You know what? I will. I know I told you.
No, not all 29. I knew you'd want to list all 29 guys.
I'm going to name them off really fast, going down to 29, up to 11. You can solve the code here. Tahir Whitehead, Matt Milano, Devin Bush, Devondre Campbell, Tremaine Edmonds, Devin White, Jayon Brown, Avery Williamson, DeMario Davis, Shaq Thompson, Fred Warner, Danny Trevathan, Levante David, Quan Alexander, Jared Davis, Eric Kendricks, Kyle Van Noy, Dante Hightower, Miles Jack. Those are your others receiving votes outside the top 10. We no longer care about them. Let's go to the top 10. Let's hit the first three here. Anthony Barr at 10, CJ Mosley at 9. unanimously, weirdly, all three of us voted him ninth place. And eight, KJ Wright. I know you wanted to make a point about the Seahawks guys, Andy, and we will have Bobby Wagner later, but let's hit it now with KJ Wright at eight.
Okay. So, and by the way, whoever voted for Devin White and Devin Bush should lose their vote because those guys both have zero NFL tackles, zero NFL snaps,
it's,
in fact.
It's forward-looking, Andy. It's projecting forward.
Okay. What makes speed so important in Seattle's scheme is, and Dan Quinn has taught me this, they understand that there will be underneath passes they can't get to because everybody drops so deeply in that scheme. There's one deep safety. There's four underneath defenders, and those four guys, they're not just defending what's underneath. A lot of them have responsibilities of routes that take place over the top of them. Mm-hmm. How often have we talked on this show, Gary, about those deep over routes, those field crossing routes where linebackers have to pick up slot receivers who run all the way across the field? More and more offenses are building around that now, which is why we're seeing less snaps of pure cover three and more of these teams that play this, the Falcons, the Seahawks, they're incorporating man-to-man concepts and kind of making hybrid coverages anymore. But suffice it to say, even if you're doing that, you still need speed because that linebacker is going to be running in man concepts against wide receivers at times. And if he's in pure zone, he has to rally to the ball because that coverage that Seattle runs is very vulnerable underneath. So efficient angles, speed to the ball, and KJ Wright has always been excellent in that regard, and he is excellent in run defense mechanics.
Yeah, that was really nice for the Seahawks to retain him this year. I know we were really curious as to what would happen to a 30-year-old linebacker coming off sort of an injury-riddled season, but good on them for retaining him.
Well, and it's not at all charitable. I mean, KJ Wright, we think he's the best eighth best linebacker in football. I think I would argue would have been foolish to not retain him.
Yeah. Well, they did. So stop being so critical, Andy. All right, our next batch of three here. We had a tie for sixth. This is Jalen Smith and Roquan Smith. And then in fifth, we have Deion Jones. I think I actually had Roquan Smith on my list ranked highest of the second-year guys. I am very eager to see what he will do with a full offseason of work going into the second season here after those goobers wanted to put that language about taking away guarantees for helmet hits and whatnot and didn't get him to camp on time last year.
The only negative is he has to learn an all-new scheme now because they lost Vic Fangio and it's Chuck Pagano going in. And my sense is Pagano's going to really overhaul things here, which I cannot imagine how they think that's a good idea given that they were so far and away the best defense in football last year. Even statistically, they dominated in every meaningful category. But I guess there aren't a lot of Vic Fangios out there. You can't just find someone else to teach it that way.
Well, what's the difference going to be? Now, I'm sure we'll talk to the Bears plenty leading up to the season here, but what is the main difference going to be between what Pagano does, or I should say what Pagano did at his previous stops, and what Fangio does?
The biggest difference is Fangio played hybrid matchup zone coverages that really hid the cornerbacks at times, and they gave safety presence to the cornerbacks on every meaningful passing situation snap. And the linebackers, they need a lot of speed at linebacker, which is why they drafted Roquan Smith, because their safeties are back, so linebackers have more area to cover in the simplest terms. What Pagano will do, he's going to most likely blitz, which means he's going to do the opposite. He's going to have his cornerbacks play one-on-one. And my guess is Amukamara and Fuller, especially Amukamara, are going to look like different players under that approach, and they're not as good at safety now either. So we'll see, but they absolutely need Roquan Smith to step up, and I think he will. He got better over the course of his rookie season. He's not the most physical guy, but physicality gets overrated in today's NFL, and he plays behind a really good stout. It's overrated for linebackers. Smith plays behind a really good defensive line, so I'm optimistic for him, but it's a bit different Bears defense, I bet, this year.
Number four.
Hold on.
I'm
trying to understand how Jalen Smith made it, considering how clearly you've made it that you hate him over the years.
I just want to point out, I wasn't going to do this because I'm a coward and now I'm overcorrecting to my Jalen Smith mistake of the past. I had him third.
I know you did. Yeah, well, that's how I made it up here. He's a good. I had him 11th, I think. I had him 11.
That is, I don't have your list right here in front of me.
Yeah, I had him 11.
Since
you're over, you are overcorrecting, but it's nice that you owe him, so it's acceptable in this case.
I do. And a year from now, we'll be the best of friends. But yeah, he came in tied for 6th. Number 4, Leighton Vander Esch. Number 3, Darius Leonard. I mean. You talked about how the Colts sort of expanded their scheme as year went on, and certainly we should expect more from Leonard going forward. Do you expect something similar from Vander Esch? I mean, they've just done the same thing in Dallas for, I don't know, when did Marinelli get there? Like the mid-70s?
I think they'll continue to do the same thing, and I think that's fine. They've got the talent to run that kind of scheme. It's not a Tampa 2 scheme because nobody really runs straight Tampa 2 anymore. I mean, you see the snaps, but it's not like anybody's foundation now. But it's a vanilla zone scheme. They start out with two deep safeties. They rotate one of them down, and they just play zone coverage from there. They'll mix in man-to-man at times. Vander Esch, when you have good talent, you can play that way. In fact, it's probably preferable to play that way. And Vander Esch gives him a great presence in the middle of the field to do that. Jalen Smith with him as well. That's got to be the best linebacking duo in football now with Kuechly and Thomas Davis separated. I'm trying to think who. I guess Wagner or KJ Wright.
If you go
Vander Esch and Jalen Smith.
If you go by our rankings and you just add the ranking number of the pairing to each here, KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner are a 10. And then Vander Esch and Jalen Smith are a 10. So they're tied.
Well, but Jalen Smith is tied for 6, so we could argue he's that makes him 6.5, which would he would lose
you
the tiebreaker then to the Seahawks guys.
That is true. That's a great point by Andy. Analytics Andy Benoit here. So, yeah, I guess.
Who would you rather have if you had to play this week?
If I had to play this week, the Seahawks guys.
Okay. I think I would too. Yeah.
Yeah. And then obviously you take the Cowboys guys for the future because they're both so much younger. Number 2, unanimous number 2, Bobby Wagner. Number 1, unanimous is Luke Kuechly. Once again, I mean, those are the two guys who are in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation every year and probably will be again this year.
And probably Hall of Famers both. Wagner might need another 2 years of high production to cement his Hall of Fame candidacy. Kuechly, how long have we been doing these rankings? He's been the number one linebacker for every one of our rankings, I'm sure, and he was probably number one a few years before that. It's rare for a guy to sit atop the league at his position for more than 3 years. If you go back and look at history, you'd think it would happen all the time because some of these Ray Lewis types, these Deion Sanders, they become icons. But when you go back and look at it and break it down critically, you don't see guys make all pro teams 3 years in a row very often. They're guys that sit number one at their position, unofficial number ones. They're very rare. Kuechly's had a long tenure, and he's not slowing down. He is right in his prime right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Everyone sort of forgot about the Panthers as they went on that late season losing streak that took him out of contention, but he made it through 16 games last year. That was the first time he's done that since 2014, so maybe you're not quite as concerned about the injuries going forward, but he always just seemed like a guy who's going to age well anyway. Even when he loses a half a step, he'll still be a very good player.
Because he knows where the ball's going before it's snapped a lot of the time. All those stories you hear, like he calls out the opponent's play, those are not hyperbole.
The most terrifying moment from last season. Remember when the Browns ran that play on the goal line? I think they had Chubb and Duke Johnson in the lineup, and they ran a play that completely fooled. Or maybe it was, I'll have to go back and look it up. Maybe it was Jarvis Landry in the backfield or something like that. But I've never seen Luke Kuechly fooled on a play as badly as he was in Cleveland last year.
I'd love to know what happened. I don't remember the play, to be honest. I'm trying to remember when I watched that game on TV. That was a 1 o'clock game later in the season. Is that correct?
Yeah. I'll have to pull up the play and send it to you. But it was something. I've never seen him fooled, I don't think. And he was fooled badly on this one. But
I bet Landry was in the backfield on that. We'll look it up.
Lightning round, Andy. And we're actually going to start with the Bobby Wagner question. So Bobby Wagner has basically said he wants C.J. Mosley money. He wants to top C.J. Mosley as a free agent here. So essentially $18 million over 3 years. Let's say it's that. Would you pay him that 2020 to 2022.
How many million?
18 million annually.
Annually, 18 million. I don't know if Seattle could afford that. I think Bobby Wagner is worth that. He's 28. He'll be 29 soon. He doesn't. Yeah, I think if you take Bobby Wagner out, that Seahawks, the Seahawks would not have been in the playoffs last year without him. That defense, that rebuilding young defense would look like a rebuilding young defense without Bobby Wagner. Although, the more I'm thinking of it, Wagner is not flawless either, though. The more I'm thinking of some of my, I've watching him and talking with guys around the league. Mm-hmm. I think he's vital, but I don't know if he's flawless.
I guess I just look at the Seahawks team, and a year ago I said, how can a team with Wagner and Wright at linebacker and Russell Wilson, how far can they fall here? And now Frank Clark is out. Doug Baldwin is out. He's obviously extremely difficult to replace, even if he was slowing down a little bit last year. But I don't think Wagner is a guy they can afford to lose. I mean, I don't even know they could afford to lose Clark and Baldwin like they did last year and still make the playoffs. But I think you take Bobby Wagner off this team, what are you? You're a 7-9 team.
Well, Frank Clark, how much money is he getting? He got $65 million guaranteed. What's his annual? His annual number is...
Frank Clark will get, let's see.
It kind of depends on the year a little bit, but yeah. He's averaging $20 million
he'll be
a
up,
year,
yeah,
20.8.
He'll be up over $20 million. Yeah.
So not apples to apples. I was going to say, well, if they weren't willing to give Frank Clark 18, I thought, it's a little more than I thought with Frank Clark. Who would you have taken if you had to choose between Wagner and Clark?
I think
long-term deal.
Boy, I think I would have taken Wagner.
Frank Clark is 4 years younger than Wagner, or at least 3 years younger than him.
I know. I think I would have taken Wagner. I think Wagner is the rock of that defense at this point.
All right.
And I think physically and cerebrally, yeah, that's a word. Physically and cerebrally. Yeah.
Cerebrally is not a word, and it's every time it confounds me as to why not. I have tried to use that so many times, and it just isn't. So then I always go cerebral hyphen like, and then I think Gary Grambling or Bette Marsden can fix it from here.
It is. It is a word now, but I think he's too. It is now. I think he's too difficult to replace. I think you can find an athletic edge rusher. Again, I just can't picture this defense without Bobby Wagner on it being anywhere near what they were last year, let alone what they were in their championship years.
You make a great point, Gary. Cerebrally is a word. As he finishes his drink of coffee.
Yes. Yes, it is.
All right.
Let's hit the next one of the lightning round. I love the classic lightning round.
I forgot we're doing lightning round. I would have been upset how long we're taking.
Rank the 2018 rookie class for the next decade. So basically on your expansion team, rank these guys as to who you would pick, who would you put on your draft board. So we have basically Darius Leonard, Roquan Smith, Leighton Vander Esch, Tremaine Edmonds, Fred Warner you could put in there.
Yeah, I think all five of them are showing promise. Leonard to me is number one. Vander Esch is number two. Roquan Smith is three. And all of the, they might be one, two, and three for the next 7 or 8 years if we're ranking linebackers. They're all excellent players. And then I'd probably go Fred Warner 4, Tremaine Edmonds 5, with the caveat that Edmonds is the more physically gifted of the two, and he started out, it was rough early on last year for him. He looked very much like a rookie, and he's a really young rookie, but you could see the game slowing down for him and his understanding sharpening as the year went along, which is really encouraging.
I would I'd go Roquan 1, Leonard 2, Vander Esch 3.
What makes you think Roquan's better than Leonard?
I think the fact that he was asked to do more in that Fangio scheme, and again, he missed half the summer, so it was going to be a slow start anyway.
Yeah, they're both kind of undersized, I guess. Leonard is really long-armed, which I didn't realize that about him at first, but. And Vander Esch is long-armed as well. I think that matters at linebacker to a certain degree, yeah. And that certain degree is a larger degree than you would probably guess. Long arms can help you when you're disengaging from blocks and in some of the ways you can cover in zone. So I don't Roquan Smith to me doesn't quite have the body that those other two guys have.
Okay. And by the way,
Who's your four and five?
I toggle back and forth with Van Der Esch and Leonard depending on the day. But I have Edmonds in front of Warner just for this reason. I think Edmonds, once he gets sort of that baseline, gets the basics down, he can do so many things. I mean, he was a guy coming out of college who, you know, you could have looked at him and said, we're going to draft this guy as an edge rusher. I think he can do so many things well once he is fully developed.
I'm going to be eager to see. He came in at 19, didn't he? So he was 20 for most of the year last year, 20 years old. If it goes well, he's going to be extremely rich because he'll be a free agent at 22, 23 probably, which means he can be a free agent twice. He'll be it again at 28.
Yeah. No, he'll be around for a while. I think he has a really interesting future. And finally, going to leave this one really open-ended. Give me a guy who's either your most underappreciated linebacker in the league or a guy who you think is just going to break out in 2019.
Would definitely be Devin Bush.
Yeah?
No.
You haven't studied him yet.
Be on your toes. I'd go Jayon Brown for the Titans. Really good sub-package linebacker. Became a really good blitzer last year. He can match up in coverage. They do a lot of disguising there in Tennessee and having versatility, especially at safety, but having it at linebacker as well can really put him over the top. So I'd go Jayon Brown for the Titans. Who's yours?
I'm gonna go not as a breakout guy, but Tahir Whitehead. Now, look, no one cared about the Raiders last year because they just weren't very good, but he made a series of sort of cerebral, instinctive plays in coverage over the course of games, some of the few tight games they were in that ended up making a difference for them. I thought he had a really nice year and at times kind of looked like maybe the only professional football player in that lineup, but I thought he was good last year. Thought he was a nice addition for Oakland.
The only guy who played all their snaps, essentially, who came in on all their packages. Everybody else was a rotational player in Oakland, which is still staggering to me.
Yeah, that's what happens when you tear it down. And that's the end of our show, Andy. Thank you, as always, to Reed Foster, Ryan Taylor, our researchers. Ryan showing the a little more football IQ this week, along with the legal mind with his rankings. And thank you.
We didn't pick on him the way we did Jeff Irwin, and that's probably because Taylor's a little more reliable than Irwin was. But did Taylor have any gaffes in his voting? I didn't actually see his final list.
Not really. He correctly put Jalen Smith third. You had that one wrong.
Oh gosh.
And no, there was nothing that would have. He had Demario Davis 15, which I think is way too high. But that's not something that anyone's going to get very worked up about.
And Davis was better last year than I thought he'd be in New Orleans. A lot better than I thought he'd be.
Yeah. So he was fine.
Taylor can vote again.
There you go. We're not revoking his voting rights. Thank you, as always, to your producer, Brandon Nix, who saw Species in the theater when he was 5. Can't get over that. Have you seen that movie, Andy?
No, but I Googled the cover of it. I Googled Species movie, and I can understand. I would hope that he was with an older sibling. I would hope it wasn't his parents taking him.
Older sibling.
So that's a whole different world. If you're going, because when you watch a bad movie as a kid, it's not so much what you're seeing, like, oh, I don't want my kid to know this stuff exists, this kind of content. You just want your, and I haven't raised kids, but I was one at one point. I remember, as long as the kid feels guilty for watching something they're not supposed to watch, I think you're still getting the message across as a parent. So if you take the kid with you to the theater and you're laughing at Species, or you're doing whatever Species does to get your reaction, that's one thing. But if the kid's in there with an older sibling and he knows he probably shouldn't tell mom and dad, at least he still has an idea of the kind of right and wrong you're installing. And Brandon Nix agrees 100% with me. Yeah.
All right. So thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You are the best. We'll be back. More ranking shows next week. I'm not sure what position we're doing next, but like I said, we're We're mixing it up. You got to be on your toes this year if you're going to listen to these shows. To get our shows, as well as the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer featuring Jenny Prentiss and Connor Orr, as well as those bad football movie podcasts that everyone seems to love so much, make sure you subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. And we will see you guys next week.